Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This. Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
If I put a top hat on my watch, does that make it a smartwatch?
Answer me this, answer me this.
If I put butter in whiskey, does that make butterscotch?
Answer me this, answer me this. Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
Last week's show was particularly exciting for listener Will. Why, I hear you ask.
Why, I ask, so that you can hear me asking it.
Is it because he lives in the Lindbergh baby house? No.
Oh.
Is he volunteering to go on vacation with Pat from Canada? No, he's not.
Oh.
Sorry, Pat.
Oh, I wasn't asking, Ollie. Fuck you. That wasn't a Canadian accent, by the way. It was just an accent that came into my mouth.
To be honest, that was probably more accurate than if you tried to do a Canadian accent.
Absolutely.
In fact, listener Will is asking about the website that's got the world talking, dixmac.org.
It does seem to be remarkably popular.
Now, for those of you that missed it, because this was towards the end of last week's show as well, we were talking about domain names, quite a dry subject, really.
Yeah.
And Helen riffed in that way that she does.
I thought of a domain name, dixmac.org.
As a way of explaining how you don't have to be a charity to register a .org website.
Is Will going to say you do have to be the charity Dixmac to have dixmac.org rather than .com?
It's actually a very serious problem, in fact. People getting hit in the face with dicks. Happens all the time. unless we talk about it, we're never going to solve it. No.
Bob Geldof on board.
No, what he's doing actually is just pointing out extraordinarily that the domain name is still available.
No!
He says, I've spent the last 10 years trying to find decent domain names.
And I still haven't, thank you.
And every man and his dog has bought speculatively, so I can't. Then I heard you talk about dixmac.org and was stunned that you mentioned a domain that was still available.
It's still available at time of recording, so how come Will didn't snap it up if he's been on the lookout?
Yeah, I think this is him jeopardising his own internet entrepreneurship here. Why didn't he register it first?
By next episode, I expect one of you listeners to have bought it, and I'd be very interested to see what you do with it. I don't want you just to make it a site of people smacking things with dicks.
I hear there's plenty of those on the web
indeed.
Already. I wouldn't know.
Or smacking themselves in the dick.
No.
Or smacking other people in the dick.
No.
What's a creative way?
Yeah.
To use and interpret dixmac.org.
Yeah, let's BBC4 this name.
Yeah.
Let's not ITV2 it.
Yeah.
Hello, it's Tim from Brighton. Helen, Molly, answer me this. I want to make a massive omelette. Can you buy ostrich eggs? And if so, where from?
You can buy ostrich eggs. The equivalent to having 24 hen's eggs. Admittedly, they're not that frequent an occurrence in the average shop that sells other egg things.
Are they a Waitrose thing?
Yes, you
are
can
they?
Get them on Waitrose online, of
can
course.
Yeah.
I also went to ostrich.org.uk, which has links to various ostrich product shops. And there was one called oslink.co.uk, which is the home of the Lincolnshire ostriches. And Oslink sells them for around £20 each, which is actually a lot more expensive than just buying really good free-range organic ones, or even duck eggs. So I would just buy lots of nice smaller eggs, because once you've whipped it up into an omelette, you won't know that it was a big egg once.
Yeah, if you're making an omelette. But if you're making like a tuna niçoise and the egg is the centrepiece.
Oh, but I've seen a hard-boiled ostrich egg and it looked quite nasty because the albumen goes kind of grey and translucent. And
so what is a good recipe to use an ostrich egg for?
I don't know.
You could use it to make macaroons or meringues.
Ostrich macaroons is just needlessly utterly, isn't it?
I think the thing is, it's difficult to cook it if you keep it whole. But if you made, say, a massive ostrich scotch egg, you'd probably have to boil the egg for about an hour. But then if you're breaking it down into more manageable components, no need to be a £20 ostrich egg, right? Actually, another problem with making an ostrich egg omelette is you would need a massive frying pan, like a paella pan or something.
I wonder if the price of the egg is dictated by the scarcity, though.
Surely.
And if Asda decided they wanted to stock ostrich eggs, if they really invested in the ostrich egg market, which seems unlikely, but hey, it happened for hummus. You can never always predict these things.
It's like Lidl and the £5 lobster.
Exactly, yeah. If Asda decided they were going to do that, then actually probably that would really bring the price down because you'd have more ostriches.
Well, I wonder whether ostriches are not very frequent at laying. Apparently, the ostrich egg season runs from March till the beginning of September. So you really need to get on it now, Tim, if you want to. Here's another question of egg-shaped objects from Drew, who says, one of my balls hangs lower than the other. I find this quite troubling. Ollie, answer me this. Is this normal?
Or... No, go and see a doctor immediately. You are about to combust.
Or are my balls just weird? Aren't all balls asymmetrical? I haven't seen all the balls. But
that's not what I've heard.
In my bald survey, they're asymmetrical.
27.3% of men have equally proportioned testicles.
Whoa! Really?
So there we go. So no. And in fact, 21% of men have the left testicle being higher, and the majority have the right testicle being slightly higher.
Oh, how curious.
And the reason for this, Drew, and it's not weird at all, is function. It stops them banging into each other,
yes,
so you can make little baby Drews in the future.
Yeah, and you don't want the Newton's cradle happening in your pants, do you?
Exactly that.
It's perpetual motion right there.
So there you go. But I think the most exciting testicle fact that I've discovered
is that you've got a pair.
One day, Helen, I'll discover that.
In your Christmas stocking, maybe.
Finally confront someone on a matter of personal belief.
Did the Disney store sell nutsacks? And you get one there.
What I've discovered is that human testicles are smaller than a chimpanzee's testicles.
Oh.
Now, that in itself, I guess, is not that amazing.
How big are chimpanzees?
Wait for it. Oh. But larger than a gorilla's testicles.
Oh, I knew that. Because everyone knows that gorillas are severely lacking in the undercarriage.
Really? I didn't know that.
Tiny little wangs. I'm assuming, Drew, that you're talking about your balls having dropped, but if you have one testicle that is undescended, then you should ask your doctor about that.
Mm.
That's a possibility, isn't it, from his
email?
He doesn't give us much information.
No.
He certainly did not supply a photo, and for that I thank him.
Yes, especially since it sounds like he's probably under 18.
Well, here is another blokey question from Sam, who says, I recently endured what I'm sure every male in a relationship has had to. Care to guess?
No, because I'm in a relationship and anything I say will be damaging.
Exquisite happiness. Yeah. A day out shopping with the girlfriend. Ollie and Martin the Sourman, answer me this. How do you keep yourselves entertained and occupied on such outings? I'm furious about this. Because if anything, I go shopping largely on my own so that I don't have to put him through this.
Martin, have you been in situations where Helen's shopping for things that maybe you're not so interested in? Perhaps 1950s vintage dresses,
no,
just
I
by
quite
way of
like
example.
It. I quite enjoyed that, actually, because I get to see Helen dressed up in pretty dresses, which is nice.
I have to wait while Martin's trying on loads of clothes. I have to sit there with a book. So given that the traditional gender roles, as you put them, Sam, are reversed in my relationship, I would say take a book or enjoy something on a smartphone or go to a different shop and arrange to meet a bit later, because often I'll dispatch Martin to a guitar shop while I'm looking at fabric samples and then we're both happy.
No, that doesn't work. Every time I say to my girlfriend, oh right, whilst you're in here, I'll be in Smith's. Oh, well, okay, whilst you're in here, I'll be in the Apple store.
Mm.
Okay, whilst you're in here, I'll be in wherever. By the time you get to the fourth time you've said that, she begins to think I don't want to spend time with her.
It's not spending time with her.
I know that.
If she's in a changing room, you're not with her anyway.
But it's just, she, in her mind, she's thinking, but we're going to shops that have men's clothes as well, even though some of the women's clothes shops she shop in sell really boring men's clothes.
Mm.
So, for example, just yesterday, in fact, I spent 15 minutes waiting for her in a Zara. Now, Zara for women's clothes is fine. All of the men's clothes are black and silver. It's like shopping for a coffin.
In the 21st century, such sexism still persists. I can't believe it.
Of course, when we went in, I'd already done the thing where I said, I'll meet you outside another shop in 15 minutes time, three times. So I thought, okay, golden rule of four, can't do it again.
Right, 3G?
No 3G.
Oh.
In fact, no mobile signal.
Go.
Well, you've got Pocket there. You've got articles you read.
No, hand bothered.
That's why you need Pocket.
You've got to think ahead.
So,
listen, everybody, save articles to Pocket to read later. I love Pocket. So did you think, oh, I'll just have a wank instead? That would get you thrown out the store, problem solved.
I'll tell you exactly what I did. I tried all of the aftershaves. There are about five different own brand aftershaves in Zara. One of them's quite nice.
Okay.
And the other four smell sort of the same, but of course once you've sprayed five of them on yourself, you can't really distinguish them.
I'm pretty sure if you mix all those things together, you get some sort of precursor for like
pretty
a nerve
toxic.
Agent, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't
want a Molotov cocktail of aftershave.
Then I played a game with myself where I tried to guess the price of the scarves.
That's what I did, though. When Martin was shopping for shirts in the Liberties men department, I played with the Liberties men's scarves, and some of those are so soft, it's like holding a ghost.
That's Liberties is a good shop to hang around in, though.
Well, because also they put chairs around.
Yeah, and the chairs themselves are probably worth about $5,000.
In some ladies' shops, you could just have a sit and a snooze.
Well, I'll tell you actually what happened is after that 10 wasted minutes, I went up to her and she said, oh, why are you still here? I thought you were going to go up to W.H. Smith. And
no!
I was like, we agreed we'd stay here. That's why, because we agreed. And then I was like, right, I'll go into Smith's now. The thing that I want, and it was an incredibly boring, tedious thing, it was clips to go on a foolscap file divider, right? The thing that I want, I think, is on the ground floor. I'll see you in there. Went in there. Of course, it wasn't on the ground floor. It was on the first floor.
There better be a thrilling denouement to this.
And what happened is she came up in a half... 2 minutes later, saying, Ollie, I've just been all on the ground floor and you weren't there. You said you'd be on the ground floor.
Oh,
and I actually,
that was your mistake.
Having just tried to be a really nice boyfriend waiting for her. I just erupted at her. I just went, I just waited for 10 fucking minutes in Zara for you. On top of my voice in Smith.
I think it's unfair for her to operate such double standards.
Yes. I thought I was right. Mm. But as we know in relationships, it's not about who's right, is it? I got my full scap clips. That's the important
yes.
thing.
Yes. Yep. Successful day.
Exactly.
Of course, I was single afterwards, but I've got my full scap clips.
But I can organise everything whilst I'm single.
My files of new girlfriends.
I've got a question.
Email your question to answermethispodcast@googlemail.com.
To answermethispodcast at googlemail.com.
To answermethispodcast at googlemail.com.
To answermethispodcast at googlemail.com.
Time for a question from Patrick, who says, the other day I was perusing a local bookstore.
Good to support your local bookstores.
And I found two books, the first and second in a series. There was, of course, a short little paragraph on the back of both books describing the plot.
Standard. You better be going somewhere with this, Patrick. There were books there because it was a bookshop. The books had pages, those had words on.
He says, on the back of the first book, several mysterious questions were brought up, whilst on the second book, all of those questions were immediately answered. I can't imagine an author would be so enthusiastic about spoiling her own books. So, Helen, answer me this. Who writes the blurbs on the backs of books?
Well,
as if it's one person who writes all of them.
Yeah, well, like the growly voice trailer man.
Yeah,
but for actually, blurbs.
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
it usually falls, Patrick, to someone at the publishing house. Now, it'll often be the book's editor in collaboration with the author, or the book's editor will delegate it to an underling. It just seems to be a job that no one really likes.
But I think authors sometimes don't know what it is about their own work that makes it sellable.
Indeed.
And the editors do, because they've bought it. They've literally paid money to the author to buy their book, so they understand why they bought it.
And also, they may have only read the first 30 pages of the finished product,
exactly.
So they can write a good tease for the rest. But as for the second of a series spoiling the first, I think that's sort of unavoidable, isn't it, in a series? It's like The Hunger Games. I've seen the first film, I haven't read any of the books, but I can imagine the first book blurb going, ooh, Katniss might get slaughtered. Mm. Will she? Shrug. And the second book, like, Katniss goes and does The Hunger Games again.
Yeah.
Will she get slaughtered? Shrug. Yeah. Then there are another couple of books. So you do have to assume. But I'd imagine that a lot of people buying the second book have already read the first one, and they're okay with it.
I actually find this less objectionable with books than with films, in fact.
Mm.
Because with books, at least you know that you're reading a... interpretation of what's inside the book. You're reading a description.
Hint. Yeah.
But it's written by a third party. It's written in this sort of elusive way. Whereas with a film, when you're looking at the trailer, you are looking at the film. Like, well, that's the film. It's not an interpretation. It is the film. And I know that they can change the way that it's styled. So something that isn't that funny can look much funnier. And a thriller can actually look like it's pretty harmless and all that. But nonetheless, you're seeing clips from the film. And sometimes, if they show you too much, I don't go and see the film.
Well, some films, they obviously put all the best bits in the trailer, particularly an action film. If they've put all the action sequences in, then what's the point? But also, I often find that with a blurb and a trailer, I think the product is probably better than this makes it look, but they have cut together something that makes it look dreadful.
Well, have you seen the trailer for We're the Millers?
Yes.
Now, that I'm intrigued by that one, because actually it makes it look much better than I would think a Jennifer Aniston comedy would be.
Yes.
Like, I watched it and I thought, okay, actually that looks quite quirky, quite funny, and it's got some laughs in it. But they have literally every scene in there. I know every single scene of that movie.
How's she going to prove to the baddies that she's a stripper by stripping? Well, I never.
So, you know, I know the whole story. I know that he picks up the boy who lives outside his flat, you know, the girl as well. I know that the American family that they see at the border in Mexico gives them the idea to be an American-looking family. I know that they get caught. I know that he sings along to waterfalls. So I've seen every single scene of that film.
Except for the denouement.
Possibly.
Well, all they need to do is add another 20 seconds to the trailer and then you're done. It's like when they used to print newspapers really small so people could send them to war zones for very cheap postage. They could do that with films, just cut a 3-minute version. Wouldn't work for a lot of films, but We're the Millers, I'd imagine not much is going to get lost.
They do it on American TV series, don't they? Previously on Dexter. Some of that stuff is masterful. Like, they'll take a whole series and condense it into 30 seconds. You just think, why did I waste 24 hours of my life watching that? Got the whole thing in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
He's a killer. He's dead. She's on the hunt. That's it.
Conversely, on the next week on Mad Men, they just have pictures of people saying words that don't really mean anything out of context. So they'll just have someone who always drinks having a drink. And I assume they're taking the piss. Obviously, they don't want to give anything away, really. But it's not actually making you think, oh, I wonder what's going to happen, because you know that they've just cut together a collage.
Mm.
Here's another question about books from Dave, who says, in Padstow the other week, there was a signature session for Rick Stein's new book. I saw people queuing to buy it for over twice the price you could get it on Amazon, or for the same price you could get it as a local independent bookshop, which you should support with your money, Dave. I enjoyed his seafood restaurant and have got his book, and I like his curries, but his signature wouldn't enhance my enjoyment in any way if he signed your curry with his finger. Meeting him or other notable celebs with some meaningful talent would be interesting in a relaxed, spontaneous environment. For instance, as I sat with my wife and other families, our children played. You get the idea.
I do, yes. No, I've been in relaxed, spontaneous environments before, but thanks for colouring me in.
Not in a queue of 100 people, all just wanting the same thing time and time and again, and paying £13 more for the privilege.
They're not really paying £13 more. I know what you're saying, they're paying £13 more than they would on Amazon, but as Helen pointed out, that's RRP. Right, yeah. It's Amazon are charging £13 less than everyone else.
Because they can, but yeah. That is what is ruining the book trade for everybody, Dave.
So from that point of view, they're not thinking they're paying for it. They're thinking they're getting something extra for free. And what they're getting is FaceTime with someone that they like.
Even if it is 2 seconds and they're not going to have a bonding conversation. Doesn't stop some people, though. They still want to.
I think if you're a really big fan of someone, then it's exciting just to be in the same room as them. Because actually, on a smaller scale, people did that to us, didn't they? When we had our book out and we went and did book signings.
One guy sat on us. He was a lovely fellow.
They brought us cakes. They asked us to write personal dedications in the front pages to their friends.
They brought jam.
Yeah, and they wanted to tell our stories about how they listened to our show. And that's the thing. So people were probably going up to Rick Stein and saying,
oh, I made you curry the other night.
Exactly.
Great story.
That's probably what Rick Stein's thinking, Helen. But for that person, they're thinking, I've just told someone who makes my favourite Goan curry that I like his Goan curry and it's my favourite Goan curry. And that for them is a big deal.
Yes, and also, for Rick Stein, although it might be a bit tiresome and he might think, oh, these fools, they mean nothing to me. If they weren't there, then they would mean everything to him,
yes,
wouldn't they?
Yes, exactly, yeah.
I think if you're a cook, that's one of those rare specialties which can involve a high degree of skill but is also accessible to the beginner. Mm. So you might get people coming up and going, hey, I tried your Goan fish curry recipe, it was amazing, but you know what I did that really put a twist on it? I dumped a whole jar of mayonnaise in it and it made it amazing. Ooh. And he can go, oh, that's really interesting, I'll try that next time, you know, and, you know. Get into a real conversation about it.
I think also a lot of people want their book to feel special and not just like any old book.
Well, this is it, because
it does
they're
add
not
value to it, doesn't it?
Well, actually, especially now that authors will often sign thousands of copies, there isn't really the rarity value.
Okay.
A signature doesn't necessarily particularly enhance the value of a book in the secondhand market.
It's important that the signature has some rarity to it.
Yeah, if you got a first edition of The Lord of the Rings signed by Tolkien.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be like getting a Harry Potter signed by J.K. Rowling, because she would have sat there for days having to sign loads and loads and loads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you get the first edition of a Harry Potter signed by J.K. Rowling is, I think, the most anyone's ever paid for an autographed book.
Yeah, but that would be stupid. Stupid rarity, wouldn't it? There weren't that many of them.
Yeah, sure, because why would you get her to sign it? Because no one had read it.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a rare signed edition of the Answer Me This book, then go to Bookseller Crow, who is our local independent bookshop.
Crystal Palace.
Bookseller Crow.com.
The George Orwell 1984 signed copy.
Hmm.
Apparently that's particularly rare because George Orwell was in hospital when it came out and he never left alive.
Mm.
He so had tuberculosis when he was writing it, didn't he?
Right, so he only signed very, very few. So it's the combination of the fact that his signature is rare anyway, but then you're combining it with something that by necessity could have only happened on that one day.
There's no rarity to Rick Stein sitting in
exactly.
a place in Padstow.
But if Rick Stein had only
where
if
he
Rick
lives
Stein
anyway.
Died that day, then suddenly they'd be worth more money. That's the point.
Morbid, though. And also, I think paper was still rationed then, print runs were smaller, and those books fell apart more, so those really will be much more rare than a well-produced, shiny Rick Stein fish curry book.
The locals here use mayonnaise, a kind of salad cream. They also have hummus, which is like baked beans, but minced. It may sound funny, but it's actually really quite tasty. Try it with some pita bread, which is like bread. Cheers!
Answer Me This Holiday, 1 hour of foreign muck, out now at answermethispodcast.com/albums.
It may be September, listeners, but that doesn't mean holiday season is over.
No.
No, the Answer Me This Holiday can be enjoyed at any time of year.
That's
fancy
right.
That.
It's the perfect barbecue soundtrack, even if that's a barbecue you're having on Halloween.
Yes, or in February. If you want to find out more about the album, go to answermethispodcast.com/holiday, and then maybe you'll consider expending your £2.49 on it and supporting Answer Me This by doing so.
Yeah, so that maybe eventually we can go on a holiday.
Yay!
Paid for by your purchases.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's unlikely, isn't it, unless we go on one of those holidays. holidays they give away in the sun.
Oh, well, the £10 holidays. Yeah. Where are those going?
Butlins, I think, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to go to Butlins. There's an amazing water slide in Butlins.
The other way, of course, that you can keep the podcast going is by supplying your questions, and one way to do that is by giving us a call on this number. 02081235877. As this person has done.
Akin here from London. Helen and Ollie, answer me this. Celebrities, when they're on a community service, which services do they exactly have to do? Because I can't really imagine them kind of cleaning up graffiti or rubbish on the streets.
You don't need to imagine that. You can just look at the tabloid pictures of them having to do that.
Yeah, although I do quite like the idea that celebrities are so in their own special category that they get a particular kind of punishment.
Don't they have to go to Harrods and comb out all the mink coats and shine up the diamonds?
Instead, I imagine in any case, it depends on what area of the country their crime was committed or which area of the country has jurisdiction over their sentence.
Or which country.
Indeed. So, you know, they all get different sentences depending on where they are. Chris Brown, for example, went and worked for 180 days in a stables.
No, he didn't, because he's just received 1,000 hours of community service for not doing his previous load of community service for beating up Rihanna. So now
I've seen a picture of Chris Brown in a stables anyway.
Yeah, he was doing a gig there for Jesus. He was supposed to do all this community service in his home state of Virginia, and instead he was doing gigs not in Virginia, right, and was on private planes in Mexico. So they've said he can choose from removing graffiti, cleaning up highways, cleaning rubbish from beaches, or general maintenance work.
But the suspicion is, as underlined by Akin's question, I think, would Chris Brown have been given that exact sentence in the first place if he wasn't famous? And it's hard to call that, isn't it? Because sometimes you do think, do they go a bit easier on these people because them being inside a penal institution, yes, it sets an example to people, but they're going to create all kinds of problems with their lawyers, they're going to be a risk when they're inside of getting beaten up and stuff like that. And actually, it's easier to have them setting an example by having a stupid photo shoot where they're cleaning up the street wearing high heels, even though that makes a mockery of it to an extent, than it is putting them in a prison.
Naomi Campbell did 5 days at the New York Sanitation Department wearing couture.
It's become a bit of a circus, this, hasn't it?
I bet a load of celebrities are rubbish, though, at their community service, because a lot of them will not have actually cleaned anything themselves for years. So having to do litter picking or scrubbing a street's not going to be really that easy for them.
Now, here's a serendipitous question from Adrian, because I was wondering just the same thing he's about to ask myself.
Was it you writing in under a pseudonym?
No. Helen, answer me this. What is the difference between jam and conserve? Is conserve just a posh jam which costs more for the same thing?
What about preserve? Isn't that a jam, like?
You're right, that is another one.
Object.
Yeah. Neither Adrian nor I thought about preserve. What idiots we are. Well, that's why you've got a PhD and we haven't.
That's some next level shit.
I've got a PhD in synonyms for jam.
And actually, whilst we're asking questions Adrian hasn't asked, also, what's so special about marmalade that it's not just called orange jam?
Oh, because it's not as fun as jam, and they want everyone to know. I think in France, though, marmalade is a more creamy substance made not just out of orange fruits.
Right. Anyway, why all these categories, Helen? They're all jam.
Well, there are a couple of definitions of conserve. One of them is essentially the same as preserve, where it is the same as jam in that it's fruit and sugar all boiled up together, but in jam it all mushes down into a sort of consistent substance, and in conserve / preserve, there's a bit more distinction in the textures between the fruit lumps and that which they are suspended in.
So in plain English,
lumpy jam.
Lumpier, yeah.
Yeah, but, okay. But others suggest that conserve is made out of dried fruit and also nuts. That what? Is nuts.
Yeah, that's wrong. Here's a question from Will in Oxford, who says, Helen, answer me this. Is Frankenstein's monster a zombie?
No.
My gut says no. What's the argument for? Frankenstein's monster is made up of dead bits of other people.
Yeah.
Therefore, he's sort of like the living dead.
Yes, but I think the general definition of zombie is a dead human that has been brought back to a sort of living state via supernatural forces.
And all in one piece as well.
Frankenstein's monster is brought back by scientific forces.
I think that's a very narrow definition of a zombie. I think the main feature of a zombie is mindlessness.
I disagree that's the main feature. I agree that's a feature.
You don't say Jesus is a zombie.
Exactly.
It's not to do with reanimation.
Exactly.
It's the mindlessness. It's their lack of agency. It comes from the Haiti voodoo priest controlling people's minds, doesn't it? That's where the original zombie comes from.
Whereas Frankenstein's monster is a very cerebral creature, isn't he, by the end?
He's tortured by his own existence.
Not at the beginning, zombie. He's just like, aah! But at the end, when he's learnt things.
Yeah, well, he's a baby at the beginning, a baby in an 8-foot body.
That's right, yeah. They speed through a lot there, don't they? Because he suddenly knows how to talk, and he's not only just talking, but talking quite a poetic way quickly.
Well, Mary Shelley didn't want to describe 5 years of primary education.
Yeah, but really, I'd say that his reading is like GCSE level.
Oh, well, he probably has to study Frankenstein then. Very common set text.
Yeah, that would be weird.
I think the book is a little sketchy about how Frankenstein creates the monster. But, of course, in the definitive source, which is Kenneth Branagh's film adaptation, here's like a collage of bits of corpses that he's stolen.
Yeah.
And why does he do that? Why doesn't he just use one?
Well, that's what I wondered. And especially when... spoiler for something that is really old. Especially when he has to make his wife into a similar monster so that Frankenstein's monster has a mate. She also looks like a collage, even though she is just one person. So I think it's a bit of a silly flourish, isn't it?
It's a flaw in an otherwise perfectly realistic film. So anyway, we're coming down on the side of
not
no, he's not a zombie.
No.
I think I'd agree with that.
I would just like to put out a plea to our listeners. Don't feel encouraged by this question to send in more questions about zombies, because of all things I don't give a shit about in this world, zombies are pretty much at the top.
Yeah, Helen probably rejects three times as many zombie questions as she does questions of cats. That gives you some perspective on her level of indifference.
If you write to us saying, what's your plan in the case of a zombie apocalypse? I don't care. I'm happy to be dead because I so don't give a shit about what would happen in the event of a zombie apocalypse.
Well, I do quite like 28 Days Later.
Yeah, that is a good film.
That's why I'm a little bit conflicted, because I kind of think 28 Days Later was quite good and I thought Shaun of the Dead was quite fun.
But they're both atypical.
Well, no, but I've seen the George A. Romero ones. Yeah. Equally, some of them quite fun. So it's not like I hate it. It's not like with sport, like all sport, which I hate.
Even pole vault?
Even pole vault.
No!
Most sport, okay. But nonetheless, zombies, like, actually watching the odd zombie film, I'm fine with. It's the speculation that's so tedious about something that isn't real.
But musicals aren't real, Ollie.
But I know, but read a newspaper.
That's made up and all.
That's a good point.
Down and lonely, life is so confusing. I need some answers, preferably amusing. Now I find... podcast that will suit. I listen to Helen and Ollie on my half-hour commute.
Here's a question from John from Oxford, who says, I recently stumbled across a photo on Twitter. At Helen and Ollie, that's where you want to be.
At Martin Austin.
Yeah. Which showed a game where young, sexy women were playing American football in merely their underwear.
It really is a fetish for everything these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's also an interesting use of the word stumbled there. Did you really stumble across that, John?
Yeah, he fell over and his dick got caught in the photo.
I presume, continues John, this is some sort of weird American sport in which perverted, fat, middle-aged men watch these women for sexual gratification.
Why must these men be fat? Or middle-aged.
I suppose he's just talking in terms that people do when they try and pigeonhole the internet as sad, disparate and desperate people.
A lot of thin people are desperate and gross.
When there was all this controversy recently about kids getting cyberbullied and stuff, I heard many times on talk radio presenters say things like, well, we all know the kind of people we're talking about in some lonely bedroom somewhere. And it was like, well, maybe. They might be in the school computer room.
They might be next to you.
Yeah,
right,
they might
now
be you.
And they might be in really good physical shape, actually.
Anyway, John continues. When I looked into the matter further, I discovered there was, in fact, a National Lingerie Football League.
Well, he must be really into this photo to do some supplementary research.
He's done some serious stumbling, hasn't he? Yeah. So, Helen, answer me this. What the fuck?
That's not a proper question.
And also... who founded this game, and is it just a form of mild porn?
They're not having sex, they're playing sport.
No, but I know what he means by the use of the word porn there. He's not saying, he knows they're not having sex, but he's saying that the primary objective is titillation.
Well, titillation is different to porn. Not all titillation is porn. But that's not the question he's really asking.
It's certainly not, but we've done very well to be so academic on such a ridiculous subject.
Just be a bit careful with that word. So it was founded by a man called Mitchell S. Mortaza. And the plan was that it would be like an alternative Super Bowl halftime show. You know, when they winch out Madonna and she does some shouting. You could go onto pay-per-view and watch women playing American football in their underwear.
Right.
Seven aside. I think it first appeared in 2009. And then a league quite quickly sprang up. And now they're going
to... sorry.
Oh, sorry. And next year, they're going to erect a league in Europe as well.
Oh, are they?
So we can play with America and Canada and Australia.
So, John, from Oxford, you can stumble across this with other people
in
as well.
In RL.
Yeah. Are they taking it in a new direction?
Well, actually, they have been, Martin, because in January of this year, they stopped calling it the Lingerie Football League and renamed it the Legends Football League. So they said, we want this to seem more like a legitimate sport.
How ridiculous.
These women are sexy athletes. And they also put them in more sporty versions of bras and knickers. So they didn't have little ribbons on anymore. But they are still skimpy and they are still getting wedgies. But it looks kind of like, it looks more like what female runners wear.
But that's just the wrong approach, isn't it? Because obviously they must have come under criticism that this is misogynistic, that it's sexist, that it's an impression of women based purely on, you know, aesthetic concerns and all the rest of it, and it's demeaning. However, your answer to that is clearly to create a male lingerie football league, and then really, what can anyone complain about? Just create a male one if you're worried about it being sexist, but don't pretend it's sport.
That's a very interesting approach.
Thank you.
You must be very conflicted by something like the Legends Football League, Ollie, because it is sexy, underclothed ladies... Mm. But they're playing sport.
Yeah.
Can you get it up to that?
I am split, yes.
You've got a forked penis. Well, listeners, enjoy that image. And
if you can.
Yeah. And if you can spare enough time from enjoying that image to send us a question, we'd be very pleased to have them.
Yes.
Our contact details are all on our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com,
where you can also find buttons to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
Hello, buttons!
And if you don't like clicking buttons...
No foreigner's going to get that, are they? Panto doesn't work in foreign.
You'll have to do it again then, won't you? Whoops. By going to facebook.com/AnswerMeThis or twitter.com/HelenAndOllie. Oh, yes, you will.
It's
behind you.
But actually, it's ahead of you, if you haven't already done that.
Yeah. And this episode is behind us, and we'll see you next week.
Bye!